No, dude, there ain't no traffic now. I don't give a shit.
Fuck yeah, we're good. All right. Thank you. We're back live. I just had too much to catch up with Sky. That went way too fast. An hour was not enough time. They paid for it. The sponsors are another couple of minutes. Okay, great. We've got another couple of minutes with Scott Schwartz.
Cool.
That's awesome. So if you're listening live, unless you totally, you know, tuned out right after that last thing, listen, you can call in. What's the number again? God, I remember there's a number.
1-800-893-9562.
That number again is 1-800-893-9562. Thanks, Scott. The memorabilia store. I love that you guys focused on that. And when I saw you last, we were talking about Corey. Mm-hmm. That you did a great thing and helped with the funeral and sold that stuff on eBay. That's awesome.
Listen, I mean, Haim was like a little brother. We did A Time to Live together. We played brothers in it. We played Lines of Anelli's Son. And I knew him when he was 15, you know. I mean, I paid for the French hooker to Papa's Cherry. It is what it is, man. Yeah, that's it. but, so I knew him all these years. I know his family. And it was like, they had no money. And his stuff is there. And it's like, you sort of have to make a judgment call. Do you let him just throw the stuff out or give it away? Or do you say, listen, you have no money for a funeral. Let me sell it and get you money so you can help bury him.
What were some of the kind of items we were talking about here? Jackets and shoes.
I had jackets and shirts and shoes and belts and hoodies. And I had his Xbox and I had his DVD collection and his CDs and, you know. No
Sega.
Underwear, nothing,
you
know.
Did you have a Sega? Xbox.
You had Xbox. I had his Xbox.
Keyboard. Did he have a keyboard in there?
I had his keyboard. That's old to a guy in Australia. I still remember that one, yeah. But, I mean, you know, they made up T-shirts that he would take to shows with him. You know, Major C or whatever, his C major was his shtick that he was doing. And there was like 10 of them in there.
His dad hung out on the set with, I got a chance to work with Corey. And I'd worked with Feldman a bunch of times, but I never worked with Haim. And his dad hung out. But I love his mom too. I mean, both. But I got to, you know, kind of hang out with both of them, which was kind of neat. And his dad was very genteel and very quiet and
The Bernie Haim.
I know. We have a caller from the 323. Thanks for calling in. How can we help you?
Hey, what's going on, man? Fucking Brad and Master Bates, man. Fucking pretty cool.
Thank you.
Pretty cool show, man. I'm glad they extended it. I'm glad the sponsors, you know, kicked in a little bit more cash.
They did. It's
that's great, man.
12 ounces of cash.
Right we're here. Not seeing any of it, but that's okay because we're having a good time, and that's what's most important.
That's right. It's not about the money all the time, you know? No, it is. Fuck
that
no.
Is true.
That's a good measurement. Not, oh, I want to be an artist. I want to express my. No, no, no. There's, pick a dollar amount, how many cars, how many chicks you want. That's a measurable, actual thing. For
yeah, but
success.
Here's the question.
Then you know, it's ironclad.
Absolutely.
Go for the money.
But if you're doing a show and you're making $150,000 a week and blah, 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 and you stand there and you go, I really like my art. I love to be an actor. I love my art. Then you say to them, okay, well, I'll tell you what, next week you're getting paid nothing and we still expect you to show up and do your work. Will you do that? 99 out of 100? Are you crazy? I don't think so. You and I would be the two. Or 98 out of 100, you and I would be the two that would show up to do the work.
If I had room and board, yeah, I'd fucking do this for free. But then you can't tell your agent, then you can't tell producers that. They're going to rape you. You'll be like, oh, I don't know, I'm kind of busy. I've got softball.
But it's the BS. It's the total BS of somebody who's making so much money in the world. But if a friend of theirs asks them to do something, they go, well, you know, I have to talk to my agent. No, you're in charge. You know what? Yes, I'm going to do this independent film for a friend of mine for nothing. What am I going to do? Have 27 million and five? Well, what's the difference? You know, that's just the way I think.
Caller, are you from, I see an LA number. Are you in the business?
No, I'm not in the film business or anything like that.
You like movies, though? You're a fan of movies?
Oh, yeah, man. Love movies. Like to watch them and stuff. And I especially like the good ones. But speaking
I like
of
them
movies,
all. Anything made is fucking good. Honestly, it's so fucking hard to
just
make a movie.
Me,
I love
fine.
Crap. I
like
love
it when
D-movies.
they make a movie with actors in it and there's like a story and stuff and it's a good story and I enjoy watching it.
We're talking about how reality television is just crapped all over the whole idea of like actors in a story and there's characters and
yeah, but then it's you know, they go from nobodies to be put on this reality crap. That's just garbage. And then they think they're really celebrities and they're stars. And
hey,
10
so what
minutes
are you guys
later,
watching
they're
on
gone.
TV?
I'm watching The Walking Dead. I'm
that
watching,
is my favorite show right now.
Catching up on Breaking Bad. I'm watching...
I'm on the second season right now.
I'm watching some TV that is blowing my mind. TV. I watched American Horror Story, which American Horror Story is crazy and psycho and just sketchy and tension, and it'll scare the shit out of you, and it'll make you think. Can't wait to see what Ryan Murphy does with the second season. He's moving on to another.
What's your favorite TV?
Modern Family. I mean, that show's right on the fucking button. It's got everyone can relate, and anyone watching the show can watch Modern Family.
Anything with Ed O'Neill, I'll watch it. It doesn't matter.
You forget
Did
he's Bundy.
Did you guys see that Lilyhammer show with the guy from The Sopranos?
No. No, but I did catch Booth at the End on Hulu alone, and you have to go and watch The Booth at the End. It's got, you know, character actors that you're like, oh, that's that guy that's kind of that third kind of bad guy lead, and he's fucking smoking it. It's all a diner, and he may be the devil or something, and all these people are coming and asking him what they need to do to get what they want. You have to watch The Booth at the End. That's the best four straight web thing I've ever seen.
I enjoy films much more than I do television. I know that there's a lot of great written television stuff. I'm just more of a movie guy. You know, if you said to me, A is on, B is on, and Gladiator is on with Russell Crowe, I'll probably watch Gladiator, even though I've seen it 100 times. It's just a great film. You know, that's just...
Gladiator was all right.
You know, everybody's different. Sopranos was great. Entourage was great.
I cry when I watch Gladiator. I fall like a baby. Does.
We all do. You know?
He was Titanic's a soldier. Coming back in
3D. He was a soldier of Rome. Honor him. And you're going, oh my God. Oh. We love it. You don't got
I
to
really be- like when Scott Swartz was a flick in The Christmas Story, and then he put his tongue to the pole.
I learned that was actually a plastic frickin' pole with some suction thing and a hole in it.
It was like a vacuum
cleaner tube. I thought it was a rubber fucking tongue.
No,
it's
my
swear
tongue.
To God, for years I thought it was a fucking rubber tongue.
It was my tongue. I have the second most famous tongue on the planet. There's me and Gene Simmons. Thank you. That's it.
Hey, you know, before I go, I have one more question. Like when I was young, there was also like rumors of like Scott Schwartz getting into porn, and he was in porn movies. Is that true?
Yeah, that was a long time ago. I mean, it's already been
acting, like doing porns or what?
I understand you never did co-aided on screen, did you?
I attempted once, yeah.
You did? You attempted once?
I attempted
once,
Did
they
once,
put
yeah.
that in something? Is that out or anything?
Yeah, there was
like
no
that?
Wood in the lumber yard, but I attempted it.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, I heard people, they get injections. Wow. I knew Bobbitt, and did his porn movie, and there's his dick didn't work anyway, so they had to inject Bobbitt's
penis. No, see, mine worked all the time, except that time. Yeah. And there were several reasons.
Do you ever do, love scenes, sex scenes in traditional pictures? You know, crushes or girls you're kissing on. Remember, you ever get a Woody when you're shooting?
I never had a scene like that.
You didn't?
No, I never had a girlfriend on camera or anything like that. So no. I probably would have.
So I saw your roles were like, you know, guy who comes in and says, "Oh, what's going on there?" and then leaves.
Oh no, I did what they call non-sex roles.
Okay.
And I did like.
Yeah. Did you
like
produce any? Did you?
I did everything.
Make movies.
I did everything, man. I shot. I produced. I worked for VCA. I worked for Wicked. I did stuff.
I lived next door to Papillon once, and Papillon told me a million stories from Texas. She's great. She's crazy. Her Jerry Springer was on when I was living next to her. Me and my girlfriend. And so she's like, come on up. We're going to have a party be on my Jerry. It's great.
Oh,
Papillon, she'd done like 400 movies by that time. That was ridiculous. But how did you get involved, just period? How did you meet that circle of people? How did that happen?
I was at the Comedy Store and I heard a voice.
I knew it. No, I'm kidding.
I was in the back of the room and I heard a voice toward the front that sounded familiar. And
thanks for calling in, caller. We lost him, but we're going to continue.
But I sort of zeroed in on who it was, and I saw this big thing of black hair, and it was Ron Jeremy. So I meet Ron, and then it was, you got to meet this girl, and you got to meet that girl. So right away, I'm meeting Christy Canyon, Ginger Lynn, you know, Rebecca Lynn, Alexa Parks, blah, blah. I mean, it was just one after the other. Next thing you know, I'm shtupping this one. I'm shtupping that. This is great. Well, you know, I'm 19 years old. I'm in L.A. I'm having porn stars. This is wonderful. And it just kind of one thing led to another. And Paul Thomas, who directed for Vivid for 20 years or whatever, he came up with this role. He wanted me to be a jester in a king's court in Beauty and the Beast Part 2. And it's me and John Leslie, you know, and I... Like John, he was a great guy, but I knew some stuff that he had done, and I just
legend.
Thought, oh, icon! It was fantastic. So it's like, you know, you're sitting home at 15 jerking off to the guy, and then at 19, I'm standing next to him doing a job with him. I'm like, this is great, and that's the reason why I did it. But then it just became like something to do. It's like, you know, they call me up, hey Scotty, we need the bartender or we need this role, and it's $200 and it's what? Who cared? Whatever. I'm just doing something to pass the time, something to give me something to do. Okay, fine. And then I did Silver Screen Confidential for Wicked with Jenna Jameson. Mm-hmm. And I played the Irving Goldberg, the old head of the movie studio. And they dyed my hair gray and I wore bifocals and all. Irving Goldberg speaking, you know, I'm doing the old shtick, you know, how you doing? Yes, okay, we've got to do this and here's what's going on, you know. And I won the award. I won the award for best actor in a non-sex role. And I got it home. Thank you very much. And listen, it was an actor. Who cares?
Yeah, I got it home.
I got it home.
It's next to my Youth and Film Award.
It is. It really is. I'm going to take the picture and email it to you. It's 6 inches away from each other. It's from my Youth and Film Award. And the owner of Wicked, sometime very shortly after that, said, listen, you know, I've been thinking about something. I want you to do a movie for me. I said, I do movies for you all the time. He's like, no. Uh-oh. So then it was working it all out and thinking about it and asking people, if I did this, are you not going to talk to me? Are you going to hate me? Whatever.
Oh, really? You did a little temperature check?
Oh, no, I did everything. I talked to my, I told my parents I was thinking about it. I told my friends I was thinking about it. I'm like, if any of you people are not going to speak to me anymore because I do this, your relationship is more valuable to me than the money I'm going to make doing the movie. And everybody's like, dude, it's you. Do whatever you want. Who cares?
We have another caller, 310 LA. Whoop, whoop. Thanks for calling in. How can we help you?
Hey, Woot. So, Cast of the Christmas Story and a rumble with Cast from Adventures in Babysitting. Who's going to win, Scott Schwartz?
You know what? I say this because I know both. I know
Wait,
both.
Two movies? Rumblefish? What did he say?
Who would Christmas win, Story? Who would win a fight?
And
Christmas Story.
And Babysitting.
And Adventures in Babysitting.
Elizabeth Shue would deck everybody. No, kidding.
No, actually, Zach and Yano would deck everybody. Scott Farkas and Grover Gill.
Oh, Farkas would totally. Well, he's great. He's
yeah, but Yano, who played Grover Dill, he's like 5'6". He's got to weigh 185, and he's a brick shithouse. He's a brick wall. You don't mess with Yano.
I'd cave. So I'd be in the back behind a car, yeah, exactly. Like whimpering. Sorry, yeah. don't touch my face.
Yeah, no, I, you know, in a brawl, unfortunately, I'd have to say Christmas Story just because of that. You know, I mean, you know, Peter, I don't know. Who would he take out?
He'd shoot somebody.
Secretary. I think he might go after the secretary, you know, do a little thing there. He'd take out the BB gun.
Weird question, but thanks for thanks for that odd thing.
Besides my friend Terry, you got any chicks that actually call this show? What is three
the
dudes?
The toy like, or on. Toy soldiers? Okay, let's mash that
Dude,
up.
Dude, that is a cool ass flick. Thank you for bringing it up and reminding me. What a cool flick, man.
Oh, stop.
No, I probably watched it 30 times, 40 times. The bad guy.
Andrew Devoff.
Very nice man. I met him at an autograph show. Really cool dude. And he and I talked about it. You know, I told him because I know Sean and it's like, okay, fine. And I know you. Da, da, da. He's like, oh, you know, the guys are great. And I'm going, dude, you don't talk like that on the movies. You know, it's so different, you know. But, and you got to work with an Academy Award winner.
So Sean, you knew Sean? How did you know Sean?
Do you meet someplace and then it's okay, fine. And the next thing you know, it's 20 years. Mm. I mean, that's like, I mean, I'm out here almost 25
years. Did you ever live
in L.A.? No, not until I moved out in the beginning of 87. I graduated high school when I came out here. You know, but I met guys, even coming out here, I met guys on auditions, just coming out on trips for the screen tests and all that.
Telling you, I hated you guys. It'd be like, who's this new kid? Fuck, because I'm used to the same, like, 18 mm-hmm. kids. And and usually you guys were like brunettes. Sorry. But
I was a sandy blonde.
Usually it would be like the New York kids, and we're like, well, we just don't have those guys out here.
Yeah.
But you stuck. I for some reason, I always thought you were L.A. That's so funny.
No, I was Jersey boy. But when... I was so New Jersey, when I was nominated for the toy for the Youth and Film Awards, they didn't even call me. Nobody called me. Nobody told me. They didn't tell my agent. Nothing. Why? I was in New York. The four other kids that were nominated were LA. And they figured it's a popularity contest. I don't have a snowball's chance in shit and winning, so why should they tell me to do anything but stay home and whatever? Why should I come out to go home a loser?
It is a popularity contest, but it's the kids that are voting.
Well, that's the point. So they figured it's the kids that are voting. They're all going to vote for their friends. I wasn't any of their friends because I was in Jersey. 3 years later, I come out at the end of 86, and I was talking about moving out here, and we were out with Alyssa Milano and her mother Lynn, and we were going here and doing all this stuff. And next thing I know, I get a phone call from somebody who says, listen, you won an award. You need to call these people. So I called them, and we had to extend our trip 4 days to go to the Youth and Film Awards to go pick up my award. That was from 3 years previous. And that's when I got my tinky-dinky Youth and Film Award, Best Actor, the supporting, blah, blah. Hey, this is great. It's a piece of marble. It sits up on my thing. It looks cool.
87?
86.
86?
I picked it up in 86, but the award was from 83.
Oh, my gosh. I was at all the from like eight from the first show or whatever. Because my grandfather had his like that award. Oh, yeah. He did the one first show, and they gave it to Michael Jackson. And then after that, it was at the top of the Universal thing or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then after that, it just my grandfather didn't show up again.
It was all downhill from there.
Yeah, it was all. And then
I think it's at the Fisherman's Lodge now.
It is. It is. I did it last year, and I gave out to Waiting to Superman.
Mm.
And
they've never asked me back.
It was,
they gave me the award and they've never asked me back again.
Shoot him an email. It's crazy. It's crazy. It's coming in May and it's a gas. I had kids running up to me. Thanks for Coogan accounts. Oh my God. That's awesome. Like, it's my grandpa. But
you know. Another, but thank you. Exactly.
Yeah, it's cool. And I hadn't been in like 10, 15, you know, 20 years, I probably. And they like contacted me. They're like, would you, you know, present the Jackie Coogan Award? I was like, yeah. So I went again. Same thing. And it's for the kids. And the kids really do love it. We did hear one table freak out. So, nominations, category after category. And today, and the secret inside tip is if you submit, you're nominated. So, but back, you know, earlier it was the movies that were making money. Mm-hmm. And it was, I think Toy was second at the box office for the year. I think it was the second highest earning money. No?
No, it wasn't anywhere near that.
It wasn't anywhere near that. No. Keith Coogan is wrong again.
I think they did like 70 million or something. But back,
you know, that's phenomenal.
But you look at 82, there's like E.T., thank you. Goodbye. The rest of it's
70 is 210 million today.
Oh, sure.
87.
Yeah, no. It made money. You know, Columbia was happy. They made money. They were happy. Oh,
how much did the toy cost to shoot?
The original budget was 12 million. And we went three weeks over because Richard Pryor went in the hospital with exhaustion. It was the first movie he did after the big burning.
Oh.
You know, and he had 3 weeks of exhaustion in the hospital. Which just, we all stayed in Louisiana, everybody, we just kept shooting, you know. Mm. They made up stuff to shoot, it was hysterical.
So you came out of, when was the last time you were involved with the porn? Thank you for calling in and sparking the topic, caller. But when was that over and what did you move on?
13 years ago.
Okay.
Almost 13 years. You know, I've been out of it. You know, when I say out of it, meaning I don't go to the meetings. I don't produce. I don't direct. I don't shoot. I had nothing to do with it. Other than I do have a few friends that have lasted the test of time because they were friends.
Sure.
And I don't judge anybody by what they do. I judge them by who they are. And that's just the way everybody should be. Mm-hmm. You know, the fact that you want to stay an actor in the adult business. Great. You know, you're a PR person. You're a salesperson. You know, some of my good friends are people from the industry. Terry Weigel is one of my good friends. She'll be a good friend of mine until I'm dead because Terry's my homie. You know, Lynn LeMay, you know, who was my 21st birthday present in life. You know what? She's going to be my friend until we're dead. That's just the way it is. Shayla Laveau is one of my friends. I mean, you know, Facebook has opened up so much because the old people, they come out, you know, Randy West and Ed Powers and Ron Jeremy. They're friends, Ginger Lynn and Christy Canyon. They're friends of mine. We never based it on what we do. We base it on who we are. You know? But as far as being in the business, no, I haven't been to an AVN award, God knows how many years, you know. Although I was mentioned this year. I saw it on Showtime. I was sort of mentioned, like, and I'm going to use the term, Backdoor Style, I was mentioned. Lisa Lampanelli did a joke or something about a tongue, and she says, yeah, like that kid from Christmas Story got his tongue stuck to a pole. And I'm sitting there at home going, oh, Jesus Christ, didn't I do this already? Oh, God, you know, oh, Jesus. And she, of course, she has no idea I was ever in that business back, you know, years ago. But I'm sure there are plenty of people sitting in the audience going, hey, we know him. He used to sit here.
You know, I didn't freaking know. Like, I didn't, you know, whatever. No, I didn't freaking know. That wasn't something that, like, percolated to me or anything like that.
It's not important.
There's a lot of things that people say. We totally covered it because I read some great interviews with you online. And I really admire your perspective, you know, and also for the number of years. How old were you, you know, when you started and stuff like that? How many years? And you're just, do you talk about how old you are? Because you look like 5-6 years younger than me, and yet you may be a year or two older. That blows my mind. You look great.
May 12th. May 12th is my birthday.
May 12th. Thank you.
I will be.
Are you a Taurus or what is that?
I'm a Taurus.
Of course you're a freaking Taurus.
I'm a Taurus, but there are there's traits in the Taurus line that I'm definitely not. But then some you are and some you're not. I'll be the even number this year. I'll be 44.
I did 42, and I did not have any idea. I was going to look. I was like, what is he? Like born like 72, 70?
No, dude, I'm 68. Oh, wow.
You know, you do no have drugs. A very boyish face, and I think I might have worked, you know, because at some point you're 8, but you have the maturity of a 10-year-old or a 12-year-old for the business, but you're playing a 6-year-old. You know, it's like,
oh, I did.
It always screwed you. You're always a few always years younger,
that.
Always playing younger.
I did Off-Broadway. I was 11.
Well, that's how you guys scorched out jobs from us because you hit age and could still, you know, you could work as adults or whatnot.
But I was tiny, too. My size always helped. I mean, I was 11.
I'm not a very fucking tall man myself.
I'm shorter than you are still, though.
Well, don't try
I'm
to
I'm not even 5'2 yet. Not yet. I say yet as if I'm still growing. You know, I did Off-Broadway. I was 11. They told everybody I was 8. I was playing 6. I mean, that's what it was. You know, when I did Christmas Story, there's no way that anybody thinks that I could be, you know, almost 15 years old. There's no way. Everybody goes, no, dude, you're like 8 or 9. I'm like, no, they just cut my hair short and it made me look really young.
Yeah, you look like 12 in the toy anyway, too. Like, how old are you supposed to be in the toy?
9 or 10.
Oh, Aaron, maybe you were like 11 or 12
maybe
when you saw
somewhere
that?
In there, yeah.
You're just a few years older.
I'm trying to remember because they did the press release they did, you know, we found 11-year-old Scott Schwartz. I'm going, I'm 13. You know, and it was like that, you know.
Ooh, there was another actor that is shady about his age. That's why I asked and I wanted to preface before, you know, I didn't know.
I think men are much different than women. And I don't know why, but it's just the way it is. We are who we are. We're the age that
we're... No, this is a guy.
We can't be 12.
Roughly our age, maybe a little younger, who lies about his age.
Corey Feldman? No, I'm just kidding. There's so many. It's like whatever.
They're letting the moment of silence ring out on that one. But you know what, though? That's another thing is... Because not only is Feldman very talented, because Feldman's been working exactly as long as you or I have... He was a little younger, but he'd started a little later. But it was all the same amount of time doing this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And as, you know, as prolific and as in, you know, huger. I mean, he was in Goonies and Gremlins and, you know.
Stand By Me.
Well, that's.
And Lost Boys. And we can just keep going.
And then the Corys takes off. And, you know, for us, it was like, that's a phenomenon where we're like, yeah, there's a little lucky dart action there, you know, because but there, of course, the talent. And I, you know, I think Haim was also struggled with. He was also talented. Haim was talented, but put up his own, you know, obstacles. He put a lot of things in front of himself and was still brilliant through that. And Feldman has been so driven and also had a family and a big family that was also in it. And if some families had a presence too in the industry, when I was a kid, it was not just the kid.
It's
the kid and the mom, kid and the dad, or the kid with the brothers, or the ones with the. I remember the Jacobys would come in.
Oh God!
Of course, Jacoby would come in with 5 kids.
Yeah, of course. It's and like that's
no,
great.
No. These two are coming up for this today. We got a room down the hall. One's in, and we're shooting over to the Valley in a minute. We'll be back over in Santa Monica. You know, all of them are going up.
No.
All of them working. I remember the Phoenixes. I remember the Jacobys. The other Jacobys, Rachel and Christian Jacoby. Mormons were all over us. And then Leaf and Rain and River and that brood.
Yeah. But, you know, everything has its timing and everything is meant to be the way it's meant to be.
Ain't that true?
We can all sit here and say, well, I didn't get it because of this or I didn't get it. It wasn't meant to be, man. That's just the way it is. Listen, I thought I was playing Mouth in Goonies. How can I go wrong? I'm sitting in Manhattan. This is after I did the toy. And I'm sitting at a screen test with Steven Spielberg and Richard Donner. And I just got done spending 4 months with Richard Donner the previous summer. How can I not get this role? How can I not get it? They wanted somebody with a little bit darker hair.
I was in Amblin or whatever on Universal. I was in Universal and we were around this pirate ship that was about 2.5, maybe 3 feet. And it was in a plexiglass thing. They're like, don't fucking touch it. But we're around it. We're like, that's really cool. And we're all talking. And I'm like, and I was for Mouth. And it's funny. I can't think of anyone from Mikey but Sean Astin. It's impossible. There's nobody. I've never ever been bitter about like Sean. That it's uniquely Sean.
Yeah.
Mouth, I was bitter because I also did some impressions that Feldman, although did a million, he did Schwarzenegger, Stallone, and like Feldman was all over that. And that seemed, when he finally got it, it seemed pretty suited. Did you want Goonies as bad as I fucking wanted it?
Dude, I would have loved to have spent 4 more months with Richard Donner again. And of course, then you're getting to work with Spielberg. Of course. And I was way old enough to know what was going down, what it meant. All those different things.
See, I'd been cracking at the movies and E.T. and Gremlins and Goonies and, you know, trying to go up for these and Stand By Me and Christmas Story, and I wasn't striking. And it wasn't until I was 16, 17, finally in 87. You guys ran from 82 through 86, 87, and there were so many great movies that came out that, you know, people love, and it's a different time. Early 80s movies had those filmmakers, it was before it became pop. Late 80s is much more pop. And, oh, that's an 80s movie.
Uh-huh. Well, yeah.
The earlier 80s, though, there isn't that.
No, there's no pop. There's no craft there.
There's a craft there.
There's a craft there, early 80s. But then you get to the mid and you get John Hughes. So you get your Breakfast Club, 16 Candles. You get that space of time, you know, which was, you know, Anthony Michael Hall and Molly Ringwald. Thank you. I mean, that end of story. There's nobody that could have done it like them.
And they created a market and an audience and a money system where people were like, oh, these things make money. Pictures of kids with acne and hormones. And
Breakfast Club, 8 weeks. 8 weeks Breakfast Club took to make. In the same location, same wardrobe. They spent nothing. Nothing. Bingo. They understood it didn't always have to be about the big blockbuster thing. Studios can make a lot of money making small films. Kidco didn't make very much money of any kind, but it was a small film. You know.
Let's produce some reality TV show because that's all that's going on now. Let's do something like...
I've actually got somebody who's interested in doing a thing with myself and my dad in the store and all of that. And I've really been against doing reality based on anything that is... Child Star Gone Bad, you know, any of that kind
but
of crap.
That's the only thing anyone's going to want to watch.
That's not necessarily
right?
True.
Well, I mean, I'm just saying like the titillation is
Listen, you can get 10 of us in a room. It's like you're going to start just rifling off names, you know, and I don't want to, and I know who they are, and you know who they are. I don't need to say anything.
Yeah, but the biggest thing you told me tonight was that Johnny Depp got you drunk on your 19th birthday. That's the kind of shit I want to hear. That's Johnny, the kind of shit I want to hear about. You know, well, you gauge the price of an autograph by... No, I don't want to hear that shit. I want to hear, you know, how did you come across these items? And what did the people that these items... What's the story behind the celebrity behind these items? That's the guy I would be interested in seeing.
No, that's sort of what... I mean, they're sort of gearing it as the shop. And I'm there with Dad. And it's the things that he and I go through on a daily basis. It's not a... It's not always smooth sailing, man. Sometimes there's just a lot of bumps in the road, you know.
Well, that does make good TV, that kind of conflict.
Yeah, there's definitely, I mean, I don't want to say good cop, bad cop, because that's not really the way it is. It's more like old father, younger son, you know, and anybody who's worked with their parent knows what I mean. It's bumping heads all the time, you know.
Were your parents your managers, or did you just have agents?
Sort
have
of. I mean, my dad was sort of my manager, whatever.
Sure,
but not really.
They're your parent. I mean, yeah. For Christ's sakes.
Yeah, I mean, he took care of me, and we did what we had to do, you know. But Marion Adler, who was my agent in New York, you know, was the agent until I moved out of New York. From the time I started, she was the first agent I signed with. I stayed with her the whole time.
Forever. Okay.
You know, and I just don't want to do that, you know. I did the E! True Hollywood story, and they completely bamboozled me and what they said and then what they did and how they promoted it and all that. They say one thing, they do another.
And no money.
And no money, you know. I've actually done, not reality, but I've done interview shows now, and I've actually put in the contracts that if there's certain things that are mentioned, certain things that are video or a photo, you owe me X number. And I put a six-figure number next to it. And I say, listen, the show is not about that. It's about this. Now, if you want to include something we're not talking about and just want to be funny, no problem. You owe me $250,000, and I really don't care.
See, it's funny because Ron Jeremy had come up to me and said, your grandfather was Jack Coogan. I was like, yeah, because I was Uncle Fister in the Addams Family, a porno. He's like, that was the closest I ever felt to being an actor. And it's like, really? Ron Jeremy? Like, you can suck your own cock. Oh my God. This is Ron
Jeremy. That was 30 years
ago. But also, he's prolific. That's the other thing I was amazed about. Adult industry was there prolific. Having been a neighbor to Papillon.
Mm-hmm.
I was, shocked. And she's like, oh no, you're not a pro until, 300-400 movies or something. I was like, what? And she was telling how much and what they expect and what she'll do. And she passed for either black or Asian or
Latino,
this. So
whatever.
She did deep dish booty pie, like 2, 4, 8, 9, 12. She, crazy. And then it was the show, The Springer, was about her family that approved. But kind of they really didn't all, but they were like, oh no, we know and we love her and, approved. Well, the thing I noticed earlier when you're going through the names, because I have a fondness for Ron. I mean, he's busted us into parties. I'm like, oh, come on in.
Absolutely.
Like, oh, I love Ron.
He's the hardest working man in show business.
Well, the people you mentioned were people. And I saw how you were talking about them. And, people listening might go, oh, that name. Or, oh, yeah, she's hot. Or, the Ginger Lynn. There's a lot of Lynns. You'd mean like three Lynns.
Amber Lynn, Ginger Lynn, Portia Lynn, Dana Lynn. I had sex with Dana Lynn. But then I had sex with the other ones. How many more Lynns came? There's several more, I'm sure, yeah.
Why did they pick Lynn? I don't understand.
I don't know. But, it was a time. I mean, listen, I come out here at 19 years old. I'm a single heterosexual male. Hello, I'm in L.A., and it's just like, I still was who I was from the movies and all of that, and things happen, and you meet people, and people want to have sex. That's just the way it is.
And I have to honestly say, this is a difference between public and private, and it's secrets and stuff. And there's like, it's no secret that people have sex.
Right.
That's a private act. But so is arguing with your wife or having, beating your child. And these are things that dramatic movies are made out of. And actors are supposed to open something and show something of themselves. And there's a certain level. I fake it. I'm a fucking actor. I feel shit. I'm a rock. Capricorn. I'm too fucking tough. I'm sorry.
People ask me, why did you quit? And I said, that's the stupidest question I've ever heard. We never quit. People just don't extend the offers to do things. That's all that it is. Being an actor is the absolutely worst job in the world. You could be the greatest actor in the world. You could make Al Pacino look like an amateur. But if nobody gives you an opportunity and a chance to show your talent, dude, you are the best actor nobody has ever seen. It's all about luck. It's all about timing. It's about being. It's meant to be. You're the one that's meant to be chosen for that. Or if you become established, then you just keep going because people will just offer you work. How many times does a particular actor from our generation get on a TV series and it keeps getting canceled and then the next one gets canceled and they give him another shot? And I think he's had 5 series in the last 8 years, but they keep giving him a shot because people love him.
I have no idea who you're talking about, but I'm thinking a few. It's funny. I was at the Friends audition, and I see Chandler. I'm like, fuck. I'm like, I know him. I know his work.
Matthew Perry?
Yeah. And I'm talking to Matthew, and who are you going up for? Chandler. I'm like, fuck. Because I had the dream sequence speech for the pilot. He talks about being naked in school or down the hallways or whatever. And I'm like, fuck. I'm like, I would cast him. It's always tough sometimes. Sometimes you walk in and you're like, fucking mine. Go home, people. This is my shit right here. I own this. I'm hungry for this. I want this. Friends was just one. It was like, I saw him and I gave up.
Yeah, but yeah. But now look at Matt LeBlanc.
You mentioned him for
TV 101.
TV 101.
Matt LeBlanc plays Matt LeBlanc. I don't care what show he's on. He did Married with Children. He did this episode. He did TV 101. He did Friends. He was playing Matt LeBlanc. What is the movie with the monkey? The thing with the baseball monkey, or he was in it.
Mm-hmm.
He was playing Matt LeBlanc, you see. He plays Matt LeBlanc like nobody I've ever seen.
Wow.
He is the greatest Matt LeBlanc.
I get an offer to play Matt LeBlanc someday.
If they said to you, you have an audition to play Matt LeBlanc, forget it. You know who's going to get that job? Matt LeBlanc.
Maybe Richard Grieco, though. You never know.
He can't play Matt LeBlanc.
There were actors and there were personalities. Mm-hmm. There were people that were a certain way. And they're fascinating. People watch them. Oh, my God. You like to look at them. They're interesting. You want to sit in a room with them for 90 minutes or maybe 2 hours. And then there were thespians. I just felt I was neither. I was just like, kid and a little bit of business. And yeah, maybe I get in. My grandfather's in it too. And okay, I work a lot. Am I great? Not necessarily. And I never really felt, there was moments, a couple of things I did with crying and the thing. Sometimes it worked. Sometimes it's glycerin.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it was like I always felt like there was further to go on the craft. And when I lost out to someone and I watch them, I'm like, really? Christian Slater, True Romance? I think I had a chance. I'm like doing the elevator scene of like, get the fuck on your knees. And, you know, I think you're fucking, I was like, there was no way I felt like I could be that cool. Of course, Christian Slater's going to do that. Yes, you get the parts you're absolutely supposed to do. Mm-hmm. They're your essence.
Yeah, I mean, the stuff that I did, I was great for. Now, they're going to put me in, at that time, some hardcore drama, whatever. Probably not. I don't think I was mentally prepared to do that back then. I think life experiences help.
Was melodrama the closest, like, you come to?
Yeah, like Time to Live with Liza Minnelli, where standing next to Corey and he's in the hospital bed and we got to cry and all that. That's about the closest thing you get, you know, that I got. I think I could do 10 times better now because I can draw on life experience to draw the emotions out, you know, losing my favorite uncle a year ago. I can draw from that to do different things. Was it a job? See, I don't know how you thought of it. I never thought of it as a job, though. To me, it was just, man, I'm having fun.
No, it's a job, learning lines, get your marks, be on time, look good, don't fucking open your mouth and get the fuck home.
But that wasn't a job to me. That was all fun.
Well, of course it's fun, but there's limits. There's rigid limits about what's expected of you as a professional. Even though you were a kid, there's no excuse to waste time on a set.
Oh, no.
Eddie, well, one fucking second goes on the production report, that's over.
I always came prepared. But I never looked at it as a job. I guess it's just maybe a strange way of looking at it.
No, well put.
I just knew I had to do it.
Yeah.
But none of it was work to me. It wasn't like I had to pay the mortgage on the house. I had to pay a car payment. I had to pay, you know, insurance, whatever. So it wasn't about that for me. The money was inconsequential. That meant nothing because I didn't need anything. I'm in a house, my parents, there's food on the table. I got clothes on my back. I go to school. Everything is great. I turned the age when I wanted a car.
Were you normal and school stuff and like baseball and
can you do that?
How do the other kids treat you?
How can you do that? How can you do that when you have auditions 4 days a week? Let's see. I wanted to be on the bowling team. Sounds funny. I was a 170 bowler in high school. You must be at practice. I'm not going to make practice. I have an audition. Well, we're very sorry. You can't be on the bowling team. Fine. I go out for baseball. Second place, shortstop, left field. I could run, hit, I could do everything. Great athlete. Can I be there? No, I can't make it to practice. We're very sorry you can't be on the team. Basketball. I'm 5 foot tall, taking on a kid that ended up playing in the NBA. I scored 17 points against him in high school. I lost 21-17. My coach looked at me and said, really, you're too short. And I said, well, I'll see you in court because you can't do that. That's discrimination. you know.
Good co.
Pretty much. And he said to me, you know, you're too short. And he said the magic question, can you make all the practices? I said, probably not. I said, when you can't be on the team. That's what stopped me being an absolute normal kid.
Mm.
Not anything
couldn't
but
commit to real life.
Yeah, you don't have the time for it. You got auditions 4 days a week. How are you going to make practice for anything?
My mom tried. This is a little psychoanalysis right now because my parents didn't work. My dad certainly didn't work. And my mom was my manager. Everything rode on me. The house payment, the bills, gas bill, the food, the cars. Three? Really? One Datsun 610 should get us to the auditions. Why do you need the Oldsmobile Cutlass Supreme Brougham with the... So I was a little bitter and we're living in Malibu. The only thing my mom had done before that was like clean house.
And you're living in Malibu.
We're living in Malibu now because after the Waltons and the commercials and a lot of TV and stuff like that. That I had ulcers, bleeding ulcers at like 12. By the time you did Kidco, I'm like, by the time you did the toy, I'm already a nervous wreck. And like, and you, it sounds so fun for you. And it sounds so like, you know, parents didn't need you to get this job.
No.
I did hear at an audition, if you don't get this part, you're not getting these shoes that you want. I have to do another kid. Okay. And I was like, I see smacked in the face. I saw parents smack kids in the face, pull hair. I got my own, you know, because I had this bowl cut. Remember my bowl cut?
Mm-hmm.
And my mom would like blow dry it. But we'd be 15 minutes to be in the valley. We're in Malibu, right? So if I move, it's like smack me on the head with the fucking brush. It was like, sit still. Do this.
See, I didn't have any of that.
I was a flesh prop.
I had none of that.
I was totally an animal thrown into the bone machine.
Yeah, you got it in the ass with no lube. Just the situation. Oh, that was the situation.
I feel a little more whole. That thank you for understanding that. I did feel that way. I felt it. I
want to now take you to dinner. I feel bad right away. No, I'm like,
fine,
why did they put you through that? Listen,
because I hadn't reached my potential yet. No. This is all groundwork. We're building the quote and this, and you got to do this. And
but you're the kid. You're the kid. You're not supposed to be the bread maker of the house. You're the kid. You're supposed to be the bonus.
No, I get $15 a week if I cut the lawn. So I work all through school in the week, and I'm getting A's and all that other shit, and cutting the lawn and picking up the dog shit and blowing the leaves and and then I get $15 a week.
But that's earning a dollar. That's learning about how to appreciate a dollar.
Right.
I washed windows in 35-degree weather with my father in New Jersey for winters after I did movies, commercials.
Right.
You got $100,000 in the bank. Dad, can I have some money? No, but you're going to come out to work with me tomorrow. Dad, can I just have some money? No, that's the bullshit money. That's not the real money. You come out working with me. That's the real money.
Bullshit money?
That's the bullshit money. Well, meaning...
An order of magnitude more money is
again,
the bullshit money.
Meaning sitting there doing an HBO spot.
You're not working
spot.
For it.
I'm not working for it. I'm having a time
that's my
of my
parents
life.
Feeling too. And they're like, you're spoiled. You're arrogant. You're fucking totally...
But the point is, though, is you were the one that they put the heat on to make sure that stuff was getting paid. The bills are getting paid, the mortgage, the car, the whatever. My parents didn't do that. That's just not... Now, did they buy a car? Yeah, sure. They bought a Cadillac. Absolutely. Because the accountant said, you need a write-off. Buy a nice car so you guys have something nice to drive around.
My mom wrote off more than I made 1 year. Ugh. And Larry Kanner, our CPA, is like, Leslie, you can't write off more than the kid made.
Right. Yeah. But that's the only reason why we had a nicer car.
Sure.
My dad, my mother had a Plymouth Volare station wagon. She had a... Oh, God, what was that piece of shit? It was a Ford Pinto. I'm talking 1977, 78. I mean, it was good. My dad always had a wagon because he had window cleaning equipment in the car. You know, poles and buckets and bleach and squeegees and all that. So he wasn't going to put that in the Cadillac.
Oh, I wasn't booking in like 84. Wasn't booking. And my stepdad had to start cleaning pools.
Mm.
And... That was kind of weird and scary. But of course, I bought the El Camino that he put all the pool equipment in.
Listen.
No, I'm not bitter and I'm not upset. That's what I went through. But they were also, look, your grandfather was chattel and your great-grandparents rode him like a donkey. So here we go again.
Yeah, but different time, different era, different generation, different everything. Now, here's my question to you.
Now Scotty is interviewing Keith Coogan
on
the call sheet.
Yes, if you did all of that stuff, and got paid zero would you still have done it?
The money wasn't, yeah, absolutely. Fuck yeah.
Okay, now we have child stars from our era who sued their parents or this because there's money missing or there's this.
Right.
The question is when you're 16 years old, it's not supposed to be about the money. It's supposed to be about the experiences, what you're building your character on, becoming an adult. No, now it's all about the money, the money, the money, the money. It's a shameful thing.
I got my money. I got way more in terms of cash than I was supposed to have. There's other things I helped invest in and things that aren't, wasn't reciprocated. A house in Malibu.
Why didn't I call you?
But I got some cash and I blew it in like 8 years. It was great.
I didn't get the chance to blow it.
Those are the 90s.
I didn't get a chance to blow mine.
You didn't. But I also was on my own when I made my biggest check. When I did like Toy Soldiers and Don't Tell Mom, that was all my choices. Nobody coached me. Nobody, when I was finally adult, I moved. I ran away at like 16, but then went back home, then actually moved out at 19. But for a little while, I was couch tripping between when my condo was ready in Santa Monica.
Yes, you can't do that when you live in
Jersey. So I was like staying with Corey Feldman. I was staying with Alfie, Soda Pop Club. Remember Alfie Hoffman?
Of course.
Staying over there. I was staying around town. Finally, the condo was ready. And the condo ate that shit up. Then it wasn't really working. And $1,700 a month in the condo. And another, $4,000 on pizza and beer. And
you had those benefits because you lived in L.A. So you were sort of in the area and section where everybody was. I was 50 miles from New York. So I was in BFE, basically, when it comes to being in Manhattan. I just couldn't go to one here and one. So I came out here when I, 6 months after I graduated high school, I came out here. And actually, I stayed with Alyssa Milano and her family. I stayed at their house for about 7 or 8 months. And then I stayed at another friend's and then another friend's. And it was just kind of like I bounced around here as well, but I was later, because the money was already gone.
I was friends with all the Zappas. And like through Lala, I met like Ahmet and Dweezil. And Alyssa would come over occasionally. But it was like I wasn't cool enough to really hang with Alyssa.
Listen, it's like
I wasn't a hockey player. It was basically the gist.
I'm 18. She's 14. I come to the house. I'm there for maybe 2 days. I go down to the set of Who's the Boss. Tony Danza puts his arms around me. Says, "You're Scotty." And I said, "Yeah." I said, "You're the one that just came from New Jersey. You're living with the Milanos." I said, "Yeah." He said, "Let me talk to you for a minute." He pulls me aside. He says, "Just a short speech."
Oh shit!
You touch
really?
Her. This is a true story. You touch her, I'll kill you. And I said, "Listen, Tony, it's not like that. She's like my little sister. We've been in auditions together in New York before she did the show. It's not,
God bless you. Yeah.
You touch her, I'll kill you." That was his shtick. Now, when boys came over to the house, she had to keep the door open. Brian Bloom, Kirk Cameron, Feldman, Haim, Scott Grimes. I mean,
I beat Brian Bloom in Starsage. I'm very proud of that.
They would all come to the house and she'd have to leave the door open. But then everybody
she had a door
right? In her bedroom, sure. But if she wanted to talk to me, she could close the door. They were comfortable. They knew that that's not what our relationship. She was my little sis.
Good boy.
I tried to protect her. And she would sit there and say, "Scotty, I don't understand. These boys come over. They don't even want to hold my hand. Nobody wants to kiss me. Nobody wants to touch me. It's like I'm poison." And I would say, listen, that's not like that. You're 14. You don't have to rush it. When it's time to do those things, don't worry about it. Just, be friends with everybody and be happy. And you don't have to rush into, anything that would relate to sex whatsoever. It's not, whatever.
Do you think she was sexualized at all? Like today's Disney kids and stuff like that?
No.
I can't believe I said that, but they do. I mean, Selena Gomez?
Of course.
I was with my nieces and nephew and they're watching Disney Channel and the Selena Gomez video comes on and I go, can't be watching this. The makeup and the beach and the clothes. And I'm like,
it's where the money is, bro.
Whoa.
It's where the
money. Wasn't then, like that back then.
It was not back
then. A kid could be a kid.
Alyssa Milano stayed a kid until she turned between 18 and 19. And once she got to that point in the show, then they let her be an adult and they let her female sexuality come out.
I had a crush on Lara Jill Miller. And I got hired for Give Me a Break. And it was Samantha's first kiss. I'm the boy that she kisses. I go on the set and We're blocking at HTV, and we're in an empty hall with tape on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, we rotate the sets, save money, and like, you're going to rehearse in the hall. Do you remember doing that kind of stuff? That always unnerved me. I'm like, God, it's really just about us. Like, fucking watching us. So I do day of, you know, blocking and stuff like that. I see my replacement coming in the doors of the studio as I'm leaving that day. He was a slightly older with the freckles and red hair, and he's like, hey, he's kind of tough, New York guy. He's Samantha's first kiss. You were too short. She's like,
you know, there you
5'11".
Go.
I'm like, my mom sent the casting director a tape measure. Like, you knew how tall he was.
Of course.
And the honesty and the truth of it was, it didn't work. It was another thing. You're fired. You know, sometimes it doesn't work out. But I had the biggest crush. And my girlfriend at the time, Vicky, in elementary school, we were like sixth grade or something like that. She's like, or junior high, maybe. She's like, the kiss episode? We haven't even kissed yet. So fucking jealous. And I was like, I kissed Samantha. But my first real kiss was with Vicky on horseback. But then she was really jealous when I went to go kiss Samantha on Give Me a Break. But then I didn't get to be on the show.
Exactly.
I must have sucked, man.
I mean, I had my crushes in high school, and I mean, I was already active in high school. But I came out here, and it's funny because a mutual friend just like said, oh, do you remember? And I went, oh, my God. She gave me an 8x10 maybe 3 or 4 months after I came out here. Katie Barbieri with the big hair.
I dated Katie. For four months.
She's like totally a mega star. She's like a mega star now.
She's a telenovela.
Telenovela, Telemundo.
She's
and all
a queen bitch.
I'm like.
Totally. She's huge.
Yeah.
She had her mole removed.
I found her. I remember.
I was like, what'd you do? You're stupid. That's your signature thing. Katie, are you out of your mind? No. I did not. Me and Katie did not have sex. Are you asking me that right now?
I was actually trying to ask you off the radio, not on the radio, but that's fine.
No. Me and Katie, we dated.
You didn't really date then. If you're not having sex, you're not really dating. You know, you were hanging out.
Suck.
You were hanging out. I'm sorry to blow you.
You were hanging out.
Katya Sassoon, I dated for 4 months. It was what it was. That's, you know. Nice. But people that you just go and you hang out with is hanging out.
Well, she didn't want to like do something because of somebody else that may have come up tonight. I don't know. I'm not going to. Name names.
Yeah, we're not going to name any names.
She just wasn't like, I'm not comfortable.
I know. I talked to her. I tried to take her out. She had no interest in me because she knew I was just a bulldog.
So her neighbors were the girls that hung with Sam Kinison.
Sabina and Malika. I love them.
Don't you?
Miss Sam.
Yeah.
Mm. The twists and turns that we have in this.
Isn't that weird?
You know?
And it was also because you worked, you were able to. I'm not going to say take that for granted, but you were able to be eye level with everybody you encountered. Because they're like, oh, Scotty. Oh, hi.
Yeah. More or less, I mean, being short, I was breast level, but that's sort of beside the point, you know. It definitely came in handy. There's no question.
But you also have a certain level of confidence, though. And as a young child, it's like, Scotty. I mean.
That came from doing the different jobs, doing so many commercials. In such a short time, and then doing Broadway, and then, you know, doing off Broadway, and then Broadway, and never really falling on my ass, that was a good thing, you know. Then I actually hit one commercial that I did fall on my ass. I just had one of those days where whatever was in my head was blocking something else, and there was three lines of dialogue I couldn't get them right, and they let me go. The only time it ever happened, one time, go figure. Don't know what happened. It just happened. Doing the movies gave me more confidence, you know, and you know, girls, it's more experience and knowledge and you do and whatever. But I'm glad this is so great. This is internet. There was a movie I watched, I guess the first time I had to be about 15 and a half, something like that. The very first Talk Dirty to Me, starring John Leslie and Richard Pacheco, the two guys in the movie. And there's a scene in the film where John Leslie has sex with the doctor that just worked on Richard Pacheco's leg. And, you know, he just goes for it and they're done fine. They're outside on the beach on this little wall. And Richard Pacheco's like, oh, my God, I can't believe you did that. You had sex with the doctor. And John Leslie looks at him. And this is hysterical. He looks at him. He says, you know what? The problem with you is you're shy. If you want to fuck women, you can't be shy. I'm 15 years old going, dude, that is the greatest thing I've ever heard in my entire life.
So a Catholic, and my parents were, sex was just like, don't do it. Don't fucking touch. Don't look at another woman. My mom was like, no, there's no fucking going to be
religious.
No dating for
very
you.
Very religious, yeah. No.
She somehow found a way that I couldn't even go to like my junior high prom. She didn't fucking like the slut I was going to go with. No, the girl. She was like calling, no, she's not.
No, I got the tape.
So she found a way to like ground me.
I got the tape out of my dad's closet, so I knew where they were.
Yeah.
You know,
I found my dad's hustler, not Playboy, not penthouse.
A hustler.
I found his hustler.
Yes.
Ooh, fuck! Now I'm twisted.
Twisted? No. Twisted is when you have a crush on somebody you've never met because they were the cover, and sort of, and not really the centerfold, but one of the layouts, but the cover of the month and year you graduated high school. And you end up through a friend talking to them, meeting them, and then having sex with them.
Wow.
And I still have that. I still have the magazine. And that's June of 86. That's a long time ago, brother.
Whoa.
But, yeah. But you know, being who we were, who we are, you know, there's no such thing as has been. There's no such thing as former. It's like
my grandfather used to say. Because he got labeled with has-been. And he goes, there's no better to be a has-been than a never-was.
Or a nope. Absolutely.
Whoa.
Thank you.
Fuck that. He was also, my mom said that he used to be, I'm Jackie Coogan. Get me at the table. And I'm like, so she experimented. She's like into behavior modification and psychology. And that's what she studied. She sat out in front of the supermarket at 14 years old. And she go, hi, I'm Jackie Coogan's daughter. And just see if they cared or not or whatever. Mm-hmm. She's like, to see, you know, what the reaction was. Yeah. Weird. So did you have any family in the business?
No.
Came out of nowhere.
No. My dad was a window cleaner. My grandfather was a window cleaner. My uncle was a window cleaner. My mom worked at AT&T. Nobody. The closest thing is my father was in the army with Elvis Presley and from 58 to 60 in Germany. That's the closest thing to anybody of our direct family being.
My grandfather worked with Elvis. So there we go. You and me tie all the way back.
My dad was his company clerk. My dad was the one who gave him his passes to get off the base every day for 2 years, you know. But when somebody comes up to me, oh, you're a has-been. Oh, you're this. Oh, wait a minute. Mm. You actually said something before about being in school. My sophomore, junior year, I went to school at PCS in New York. My senior year, I went back to my local high school. My freshman year, my senior year, I got my ass whooped. You know, bullying. That's what they call it now. No, I call it an ass whooping, okay? It is what it is. I got thrown into lockers. I got thrown into garbage containers. Mm-hmm. I got thrown into showers.
I got punched in the gut, thrown in the garbage, face first, down in the garbage, by a girl. That was even better.
Oh, no, mine was a guy. Eric Sterrett, piece of shit motherfucker. I hope he's dead.
Derek Streeter punched me in the forehead.
Yeah.
To get a handball court right in the forehead. Yeah. And the other one, hey, you're on TV, right? I'm like, yeah, punched me right in the gut. I took karate. Never fucking happened again, I'll tell you that.
I was too small. Even if I took karate, I was too small. He was probably 5'7", 5'8", and I wasn't even 5 foot. I graduated high school. I was 4'10.5", and I weighed 96 pounds. That's my graduating size. There was nobody I was going to beat up. But about halfway through my senior year, my friends started to show up and make the difference. You know, hey, listen, dude, you got to stop doing this with Scotty. This is ridiculous, you know. And then, of course, the football players that I knew and all them. Dude, what is he doing? Oh, we'll take care of that. And they throw him in a shower or they do something stupid, you know. And eventually he sort of just cut it out. But he did it to me since middle school.
Do you remember the movie My Bodyguard?
Of course. Chris Makepeace.
I love that as a kid.
Great movie.
I always wanted a bodyguard like that.
Oh, what are you doing? Come over here, Ruth. Oh, she's so wonderful. Love her. George Segal.
Scotty, it's been... I cannot tell you how great. Thank you for talking about everything. And thank you for, you broke me down. You gave me a good couch session.
Oh, anytime,
you
brother.
Know, and I've always kind of known in my head, like logically where I got to be at in headspace. But you kind of put it in my heart a little bit there. And it's funny, I guess because of the nature of my parents and the nature of the way I was in the industry, different to the way you were.
Mm-hmm.
I'm more of a...
you have a little more edge than I do, but you have a reason why.
I have edge? Oh my God, Scotty Schwartz just said Keith Coogan had edge. I'm the most Disney boring motherfucker. I wish I had more edge. Thank you.
No, it's in your belly. it's there. It's like I saw some of the things that you were saying, things about your mother and about the shit that they put you through and all that. Okay. Oh, no, it's there. You just kind of buried it. It just kind of sits
buried
in your
it?
Belly.
Catholic style.
It sits in your belly.
Oh, no. It's deep down, pushed down. Oh, yeah.
I say it this way. I know you want to wrap this up. We are a few. We are two people of the very few that get to leave something behind. There's 3 billion people on the planet, and basically very few do something that will stand the test of time.
And we survive because so many people that we've lost, River, Corey, Heath.
Gary.
Thank you.
Dana.
Yeah. So that's, I also know, you know, what, how it feels to feel bad about having and then having not, struggling, making it, not coming back, mm-hmm. going away. I had like 2-3 comebacks just before I even hit Adventures in Babysitting, according to TV stuff.
Yeah.
Really. That I understand all of that. And then to a degree, it's like, yeah, I totally get it. And I'm so grateful to be a fucking live when I see those. You just named 6 people. And I can only think of like 20 people, really, that have this, the toy. I can only think of about 20 kids our age with, if you're talking about 80s and stuff like that. So we are absolutely survivors. There's only a dozen of us left, let's say.
Yes.
Right?
Maybe 20 of us.
Right. Could have gone.
Either way.
I could have wound up in a ditch, dead, struck in the neck by a knife.
I almost did once. Right? No. I almost did once.
So totally here, downtown LA, Skid Row Studios, and thank you for your time.
It's a pleasure. We'll do it again, I'm sure.
Love you, Scotty.
You got it, brother. Love you too, man. Dinner is on me.